This is Janie Reisner. My guest this evening is artist, scholar, and author, and grandmother, Lydia Rule, whose research into sacred images of women have taken her around the globe. She taught on the visual arts faculty of the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley for 25 years. Lydia creates and exhibits her art and does workshops throughout the U.S. and internationally, and has led women's pilgrimage journeys to sacred places. Goddess icons' spirit banners are sacred images of the divine feminine from the many cultures of the world. Each image was created and revered at some time in human history. Her goddess icon spirit banners have flown in Australia, Canada, Britain, New Zealand, France, Luxembourg, Italy, Greece, Serbia, Bulgaria, Germany, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, Russia, Turkey, Ghana, Kenya, Brazil, Mexico, Costa Rica, Peru, Japan, Nepal, Bhutan, Tibet, China, and the United States. What an extraordinary list. Spreading their divine feminine energies. A book about her work, Goddess Icons, Spirit Banners of the Divine Feminine, was published in 2002. Turkey Goddess Icons, Spirit Banners of the Divine Feminine, was published in Istanbul in 2005. Her banners will be on display at the upcoming Matriarchal Studies Conference at Fisherman's Wharf, San Francisco, May 10th. This one-day conference, which we will be discussing, is in conjunction with the Association for the Study of Women in Mythology, www.womenandmyth.org, which extends the conference to 3 days. I'm thrilled to be part of the Matriarchal Studies Group singing my music.
We walked by the creek deep and wide. You stood straight and tall by my side. When a voice pure and clear came through the air, no matter where you wander, no matter where you go, I will wait for you till the end of time comes here. I don't know how we came to be. I took a long time to see that you were my heart's desire. And no matter where you wander, no matter where you roam, I will wait for end of time comes here. This must be the love of all time, to have opened my heart to the sublime, with heaven just around the door, and I hear the words that sing forevermore. I will wait for you till the end of time comes here. I think we've come a long, long way to be together on this final day. As holy light fills up the scene and the voice sings on with her message, sweet and clear. I will be with you as the end of time comes here. I think we've come a long, long way to be together on this final day. As holy light fills up the scene and the voice sings on with her message, sweet and clear. I will be with you as the end of time appears. I will be with you as the end of time comes here.
Okay, I want to say that was recorded by Peter Temple in 2006 in Preston Hall on that really beautiful piano. Okay, dear Linda, are you there?
I'm here.
Good.
Lydia.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Welcome to Women's Voices. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
I know you are busy these days as one of the planners of the upcoming conference in San Francisco. And, you know, we are so lucky that it's being held so close to us here that we can attend if we wish. Normally, it's held all over the world and certainly not near where we live. So that's a very important thing to think about.
Well, the choice was made, I think, to have it in the Bay Area because you have such a strong goddess community in that area, so, and two institutions that have students, some of whom will be presenting at the conference, the California Institute of Integral Studies and Institute for Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto. So I think that was the plan of moving the mythology people to San Francisco was to involve more of the West Coast stories and the women who are doing such wonderful work.
Well, good. I'm glad. you know, my first question is, given that this is Women's Voices, how did your amazing mother influence you to become the woman that you are today?
Well, my mother was a tiny little woman, 4'10", 100 pounds, and her one of 10 children. She was in the middle. Her family were immigrants. They came to this country from Russia so that their children would have a better life, and they went to Ellis Island in 1905. My mother was, her older three brothers and sisters were born in Russia. Mother was born in Lincoln, Nebraska, and they were farm labor, beet field workers, picked cherries, did all the work that now today is also done by a lot of immigrant labor. And it's what has made our country such a strong place because we have these waves of immigrants coming in. My father was in all family also was German from Russia, and he was a middle child. And so when my parents got together, the two of them revered education. Mother was a teacher, my dad was a lawyer, and they expected us to become educated. It never was any question. And they gave us a very rich growing up, so that mother's influence was very strong. She was a farm girl. We live on my grandparents' farm today, which was developed into subdivisions right after the Second World War. And my parents developed the area for families with children and animals and gardens. Mm. Now it's surrounded by the city and next to the University of Northern Colorado, where I teach. Mother had to do her field work and milk her cows when she went to, it was the Colorado State Normal School at that time. She always had a lot of energy, and her mother did not want her to go to college. Her dad said she could go if she did all the farm work, which she did. So she appreciated, I think, a lot of realities and made them as available as she could to her children. And I was a wonderful beneficiary of that. It was a lot of hard work, too.
Well, it's such a story that you are living on the land that your grandparents...
Right.
And that they were nearby when your mother... Is that not true? Were they when your mother was there?
Well, they started on this property in 1918. So they had been in the U.S. about a little over 10 years at that point, and had worked hard and were able, I guess, to rent the farm and then eventually purchase it. But they were almost lost it during the Depression. My dad saved it as a lawyer through the Federal Land Bank, one of the programs that helped farmers survive in the 30s. We live there today. Mother left and taught school in Arizona and then married my dad, and we lived in Denver and moved to Greeley, but we didn't live on the land until 1946 after the war. Mm-hmm. We moved out to the area that we're in now. I did not know my grandparents on either side. They were gone by the time I was born, except for one grandfather. And my parents were in the middle of 10 children, so the generations there were stretched quite a ways in time. So I really didn't ever have any grandparents that I grew up with, but I had a dozen aunts.
I see. And then as you married, you had your parents living next door to you for their lives.
Well, what happened is that my parents were truly visionaries. They were proud of their heritage. They wanted to preserve it. So they founded an organization to do that because the Germans and the Russians had been so demonized during two world wars. You know, they were the other, the ones that you didn't trust, et cetera. Right. And they knew there was a stronger, richer story there. And now that organization is worldwide and has thousands of members, and they have all these contacts in Russia where they can trace your lineage. And it's really quite remarkable. Well, they did that. Then they also got involved with Rammed Earth and and politics. So there was a circle of Democratic politics in Greeley in the late 30s. That included James Michener, the author.
Yes.
He taught at Colorado State College at that point. And so they, in that group, attracted interesting people, including an architect who had studied with Frank Lloyd Wright. Well, this architect was very intrigued with the idea of building out of rammed earth, which is clay soil tamped hard between forms, not made into bricks like adobe, but solid walls. So in 1946, my parents built the first rammed earth home on this land with earth from the land.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I'm 11 years old at that point. And so I can remember all of the projects, but eventually they built five places, including a barn for the animals that I grew up with when we were farming. And Bob and I turned that barn into a home in 62. We are still living there today. This will be 50 years.
My goodness.
In the rammed earth walls. And it was next door to my parents. My children grew up with their grandparents next door with woods and open spaces in between, a cherry orchard, and very little supervision, they will tell you.
How wonderful.
Because they could play.
Yeah. I remember those days myself growing up on the farm.
So that was a rich experience for them. It was an interesting experience for me because my mother always thought I was just another extension. And so she had me picking apples at 45, almost off a ladder, things like that, till I refused to do that anymore. One of the ways I discovered I could get away from her was to get into art, which I did. I was raising three children of my own and two of my sisters. I had four little people under 18 months.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's crazy making, actually.
Yeah.
I just don't know how mothers deal with multiples. Over a long period of time, I'm fortunate I had just a few years of it. But that's what made me realize I had to do something else than what I was doing. And I chose to do art. So I went down and bought paint and canvas, and I painted on my kitchen counter while the kids were down on the floor and nobody could reach it. I say they survived, and so did I.
I'd say you all survived beautifully. What drew you into the sacred feminine? I don't think it was part of your growing up years.
No, it was not, although I grew up in a congregational church where we went every week, and I taught Sunday school and the whole nine yards, but they did never teach dogma. I didn't get a really firm biblical story, and they certainly don't believe much in images. In congregational churches, those are the white New England ones. So I was lucky. And then when I began to study art history and teach it, I recognized that the stories weren't giving women much. They were not about women, and I wanted to find them. I worked with Judy Chicago on the Birth Project, not the Dinner Party. And by then, I was very conscious, along with the feminist movement, that the women had to tell their own story. Men weren't going to tell it. So I found images in art and art history and taught about them, and then eventually taught a course called The History of the Goddess. But the whole evolution happened when I discovered art and art history and the stories, and then my own children had left, and I was in a depressed state. All my art was dark, and there's a reason for that, because I was in despair. And then I found these images, and it blossomed. I used nothing but black and brown for 2 years, and then I used nothing but bright color, and then I finally put the two together, because you have to have black and white to have any dimension in art. Color alone won't do it, even though the Impressionists tried that a lot, and their work is wonderful. But the dark brings out the depth in a person and in art. Then you have to face it. And living gives you many experiences that way.
Well, it does, absolutely. And, and especially in this world, we are surrounded by the dark, it seems. Let me see. Let me finish with the banners. Is it silk screen that you use? You silk screen them?
No. The banners happened because I was invited to do an exhibition in Turkey. And I had traveled there in 1990 and met a person who wrote a book, Land of the Mother Goddess, Rashid Erginer, wonderful man. And my connections with him, he wanted me to come and teach at Bosphorus University in Istanbul, and I was all set to go, and then the Turkish government put on a, they stopped any foreign people coming in to teach because they wouldn't pay them in the Turkish lira, which was in bad straits. So they, I couldn't teach. And meanwhile, he'd got me an exhibition at the Celsus Library in Ephesus. And I think one of the reasons that the director was interested in having an exhibition of mine was my name, because that is the ancient kingdom of Lydia. And so what would happen in the summers is they would hang art in the niches at the Celsus Library. Mm. It doesn't have a roof, and I recognized that I did printmaking for 25 years, that my prints really couldn't be out there unless they were protected, and some of them were pretty good size. So I asked the director how we were going to deal with that, because I didn't want to ship crates from the United States with them. I thought maybe they could get framed in Turkey. Well, I could see that he says, this is the Ephesus Museum, we could do anything. And I think, and I look around and I'm thinking, oh, yes, but I don't, you still don't understand what I'm talking about. So on the flight home, I said, I've got to do something else. And so I decided to paint the images on nylon fabric that could hang out of doors for the month of July. And it wouldn't make any difference about the sun or it doesn't rain then. But, and that's what I did. So I came home and I painted 18 3 by 6 feet banners in almost 8 weeks. It was crazy. Somehow I had the energy and I did it. And I based those on the findings from an archaeology dig at Çatalhöyük. Plus some of the images that have been in Turkey for, you can study the goddess there for 14,000 years. And from there, they've traveled. They went to the UN Conference on Women. I gifted in China. I gifted the Çatalhöyük banners to the archaeology site, which was reopened after the exhibition. Mm. And then others saw them. They got invited to Russia the next year. And it just is continuous. They are continually going somewhere.
It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. The interest seems in other countries greater than here.
Yes and no. When I talk to the women sponsors there, their stories sound a lot like ours, that people don't appreciate the goddess. But again, there are groups and aware people that are trying to bring out the story. Matriarchal studies is in a similar situation. It's a field that Heide Guttner Abendroth, a German woman, researched and did her PhD on and has written 10 books on. And through her connections worldwide, there's a growing group that is presenting at conferences of all kinds and then having their own so that the story gets told.
Yeah, thanks for talking about her. Please go on. It's important for us to understand.
Well, Heide was born in East Germany during the war. She's a phenomenal woman.
And
she'll be the main speaker at the conference when you're going to do your gorgeous music before she speaks.
Yes, I couldn't ask for a more wonderful position to be in.
Well, it's a tremendous evening that shouldn't be missed if you're in the area. The whole day from 9 to 9 is going to be pretty wonderful, too, but the evening is particularly going to be rich. I'll just read you a little bio brief about her. She studied at the University of Munich, has her PhD from there, taught there. But she's going to share her lifelong passion on matriarchal studies and the founding of modern matriarchal studies. Her research puts an end to the common prejudice that matriarchy means women's rule. In matriarchy, women are the center of the culture. The social guideline is not to have power over others and nature, but to nurture and to tend the natural, social, and cultural life. Heide will show that matriarchies are truly egalitarian, for they're based on gender equality and respect. Their political decisions are made by consensus, insightful and well thought out through principles ensure a peaceful life for all.
Mm. Beautiful.
She's pretty amazing.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. If people were interested, that they could just...
Right. It's my name, Lydia Rule, and it's LYDIARUYLE at AOL .com.
Mm-hmm.
And then my email is at AOL.com.
And people can get to register for the conference through you?
I don't have it on my website. Sadly, my website needs redoing. And I paint banners instead of do it.
I understand.
You can Google,
I think I've got it. Would it be www.womenandmyth.org?
Yes, that's the mythology.
That's,
but Matriarchal Studies is on their site as well.
Okay, and that's the Matriarchal Studies. It sounds a little confusing, but the Matriarchal Studies is May 10th. And that's a one day. And then the myth and archaeology are the 2 days following that, all in the same place. You just flow one into the other.
That's correct. And the reason that we are doing this is that there have been 3 large matriarchal conferences in the last 10 years that were sponsored by the government in Luxembourg, by the University of Texas San Marco, and a wonderful Genevieve Vaughan, and then the Matriarchal Studies Library in St. Gallen, Switzerland. Well, we could see that we didn't have a sponsor like that in the United States, but that we would try to hold a day and bring the subject to the table. And I knew about the Women in Mythology and their conferences, so I talked to them and they agreed to let us combine with them.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And they are a perfect joining, I think, of the two subjects, and Matriarchal Studies will be one of the subjects that they also pursue in their 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole, both, all the days are self-funded. They don't have an institution or a government or someone helping with it. Just the groups themselves are funding it with people paying to attend. So it's a big gamble to take the leap a year ago or 9 months ago, but it appears that both groups have enough people signed up now to sort of cover their expenses.
Well, that's wonderful. I know you're going to be speaking on the 2-day event on a panel with Heidi and Max Dashu and Vicki Noble.
Correct.
That should
and they're
be.
Really kind of the foremothers of matriarchal studies. Heidi in Europe, and then Max and Vicki here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of giving the overview and talking about the conferences that have already been held. And then they will talk about matriarchal studies.
I want to say again, this is KZYX. I'm Janie Reisner. You're listening to Lydia Rule, artist of goddess icon banners, and who has helped put together this wonderful conference that's happening in May. In the larger conference, I was reading about it, a one-woman performance, Goddesses.
Yes.
Which sounds very interesting, performed by the playwright Dorothea Reyna, I believe. And it's based on Goddesses and Every Woman by Jean Shinoda Bolen. And Jean will be there on a panel, as well as Marilyn Keller from CIIS, who I have interviewed. And I'm not sure how to pronounce her name.
Arisha, I think they call
Arisha.
Her.
Arisha Rezek.
Right.
So she's the chair of the Women's Spirituality Program at CIIS.
Yes.
Anyway, if you decide to go, you can stay at the Holiday Inn. They have, I guess, good rates for people. And anyway, it's certainly worth thinking about, and I'm totally thrilled to be a part of it. We're seeing what a mess we're in, and that the war on women is really escalating like never before, and it does seem that women, in certain instances, are beginning to be really outraged by it and stepping forward.
Well, I hope so. Only women are going to make the change. And it's up to us to not accept what's happening across the country. Mm-hmm. We have to elect responsible representatives who are not going to pass laws to control women's bodies.
Yeah.
And we have to take charge. I'm really a political activist, among other things. I have a degree in political science before I got dark. I've done a lot of that action, too, over the years. It's really a critical time.
It is a critical time. We're seeing about trying to elect anybody is that there's nobody that even can run that would be possibly someone who would correct the situation. That's, you know, what's so horrible about the Citizens United. They control it all, really. You were speaking earlier about Girl Scouts and that they have been targeted as well.
Right. Believe it or not, this is their 100th birthday. They were founded in 1912. And so there was a resolution in Congress and in all the state legislatures to wish them happy birthday. Well, I think the first person who refused to sign it was from Ohio and gave a big a speech against the Girl Scouts because they taught feminism.
Huh.
Of course, that's exactly what they do. And feminism is about choice. I like Will McMahon Killer's definition. Feminism means choice. Every human being deserves the choice of what they choose to do in their lives, what they choose to learn, they choose to eat, educate, etc., not to be told by the government or somebody else. But somehow that's gotten twisted around to be evil. I lived through feminism when I was teaching. It was the F word. Huh. None of the women would call themselves feminists. And I was teaching, my course was accredited with women's studies, and it was a general ed course for arts and sciences. And so definitely during March, which is National Women's History Month, they got a dose for me about the women couldn't have been sitting in that classroom if some feminists had not fought for them to be educated. Because 100 years ago, they couldn't sit there. Mary Cassatt couldn't draw from humans. She wanted to draw from cows at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, so she had to go to France to draw and paint. And, it's up to the women today, all of us, to keep that paying forward. Women are equal to men. In fact, there are more women, I think, statistically, than men in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have, it's up to them to find their voice, claim it, go out and run for office, vote, just get together and stop this madness. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's frightening. Well, what did you say, the Girl Scouts, that how many women...
Okay.
Yeah.
go back to the Girl Scouts, right. By the way, my mother founded the Girl Scouts here in our northern Colorado, and I was a leader, and our girls were in Girl Scouts, and my granddaughters are in Girl Scouts. So we had four generations of Scouts.
Wow.
The Scouts teach leadership. They teach community. They teach how to impact your community. And so they are teaching women, girls, how to speak up and come out into the world and choose what they want to do. And I think they should definitely be commended for that. They teach them business skills with the Girl Scout cookies. That's the largest economics project for girls in the country. They also, through their citizenship and leadership, 80% of the women elected to public office today were Girl Scouts. So that's the process that they've learned and over time. And to me, it struck me, it's very much like the matriarchal studies, where you teach people to become self-aware and then to be part of their communities and to arrive at decisions with consensus.
Wow, that's so good to know.
So I think anyone, please, if you know a young girl, a scout, tell her great job and support those programs. They're really quite amazing. And they're very inclusive. You know, we had a big stink here in Colorado because there was a transgender boy who wanted to become a Girl Scout, and the troop accepted him. And then that created a big fuss with the national media because the Girl Scouts were now going to be homosexual.
Did that end?
It was brought up when they were trying to demonize them and say that they were feminists and they were not teaching family values and whatever else they try to promote.
Well, you know, we could open up the phone lines. It's 20 of. Are you open to doing that?
That's fine.
Okay. Okay. The telephone number is 707-937-5103 if you'd like to call in and speak with Lydia. You are an elder. I'm an elder too. And in this time of great turmoil on the earth, I'm wondering if you have some truths that you'd like to, in addition to the many you've been giving us, that you'd like to pass on, or what your views are about what's going on.
I think that many people are searching for some kind of a spiritual experience, and they come in so many, many ways, in nature, in the traditions that you were raised in meditation, in yoga, and then visiting sacred sites has long been a process where people connect with something beyond themselves. That's what ICOMS are there to do, is to help you go to a greater awareness of spirit. And I think it means we're all interconnected. To me, we're all one. And so all of these various methods of reaching spirit are to be honored, not demonized, if you don't have the right program or story or disc in your computer. I would say to the students, you know, you were born into a system of spirit. Or we could call it religion. Your mother and your father came together, and so you inherited that. And only when you look at others' experiences in that realm will you even understand your own, let alone come to realize what it's about. And art helps you do that for me.
That's true.
It's a nonverbal thing. Our brains respond differently to visual images.
Absolutely. It kind of passes by the mind and really evokes a deeper response.
Yes, it does. And it also perhaps passes the judgment. When I'm teaching art, it's one of the hardest things for people to do is to not judge their art immediately and have a negative judge, because somehow a lot of people grow up saying they can't draw. So I say, well, you can make marks. So let's try making marks. And let's make marks to represent you. Let's make a mark to represent the higher spirit, whatever you want to call that. Make a mark for an angel. And we go down through concepts like that, eventually ending up with transformation. And you know, when they do these mark makings, it's a symbolic language, and everybody has a different set of marks, but they hang together. They're cohesive. And then the assignment is to take those marks and create something with them. And I've had students dance them. I've had students definitely write them, but also paint or print or whatever. Mm. Yeah, I think if you explore those kinds of experiences and then turn off the judgment switch for a while.
That's key.
That's key. It's really key.
Yeah, I know. I know from my own beginnings. Not knowing what I was drawing or, you know, I never considered myself an artist.
Yeah. That's the story I hear all the time.
Yes, yes.
And I wasn't considered an artist. My parents didn't think that was a legitimate thing to follow. And they did not encourage me to do art at all. In fact, my mother didn't like it one bit. She liked it when I painted flowers. Okay, but she did not like the goddesses. She didn't like them at all. Particularly the naked ones or the nude ones. But, again, it's a judgment issue. The human body's a beautiful form. When you're drawing it, I can assure you, you're in a different space. In order to get your hand and eye to take what you see and put it on a paper or canvas, it's not a sexual act at all. It's an act of reverence and trust and using your innate ability. I did a whole, when I was taking my master's, my kids were in grade school, and I was doing a new drawing for a semester, and I had told my parents about it, and my mother was horrified, and then my dad didn't know what to do. So he actually walked down the hill in a coat and tie with his hat on, went to the front door, and wanted to talk to me. So, Leslie, I need to talk to you. I said, well, what do you need to talk about? Well, I need to talk about the new drawings. And I said, well, do you want to come and see them? So I took him back into the studio, and I had them all propped up. Because when you draw, you have to look at them from a distance and then go back and forth and whatever. And I had them up, and I said, and what do you think of these? I've had them up, and Steve and his third graders have all decided which one they like best. Which one do you like best? And he is just horrified.
I bet.
Well, he doesn't know what to say. And so he just looks at me and he says, I have one daughter who's a medical doctor who examines them naked, and I have another one drawing them. I don't know what I do. And he walked out.
Huh.
But he didn't tell me to stop, and he didn't scold me.
Yeah.
And, of course, by then I'm 30, almost 40 years old.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, and I'm sure he learned from it.
Yes, yes.
I'm just remembering that now and really laughing because I'm seeing him with his hat on.
Well, of course, the human body is the most wonderful thing you could draw.
Right. And to get it down so that it looks recognizable is a challenge.
Absolutely.
But that's going through that many, many times over 50 years or so now is how I can paint the banners. Or I did a whole series of self-portraits. But, you know, you use the gift and you refine it as you use it.
Well, I'm thinking as you are painting these, you're probably painting from statues or from etchings on the wall or in a rock.
I'm painting from all kinds of things, sculptures, drawings, weavings.
And I'm thinking that you must, I mean, when you realize how old these images are and what the mentality, what the feelings must have been at the time toward them.
Right.
Of reverence.
Yes.
Of
deep
reverence.
Deep reverence. Deep, deep reverence.
And to come back to that in ourselves by looking at them.
Right.
You know, I think images are so potent in that way. I haven't had much experience with European and other countries, but I think of primitive people and Mexican And
they're wonderful,
and they're read, after a while you begin to read them. You know, there's a language.
There's a language. They form a whole. And what's interesting about the Mexican images and the Peruvian and the Western, basically Western Hemisphere images, Europeans, when I first was including them, didn't like them at all. In fact, they'd ask me not to send them. They thought they were ugly. So I had to went through an education process saying, well, these are from these cultures. This is their version, and they think it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well,
not everybody looks like the Greco-Roman classical art.
Right. I think in the more primitive cultures, the Tree of Life, I know this from my own knowing, is the most extraordinary. It's spirit. It's everything. It's all of life.
It is.
And it's to be revered. That image is so common in many of their paintings. And the image of the bird, the image of the serpent, they all just have really powerful meanings.
Yes, they do.
And it lets us know that they had a huge vision of life and the other realms and of spirit and God. And, you know, they just were drawing from that place.
Right. They had a different language of spirit than the Western one that we've inherited from the Greeks. The Greeks really did the number hard on women.
You know, may I interrupt you? We have a call.
Yes.
Okay.
Take the caller.
Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Hi, Janie. I just wanted to say to your guests that the important work of, like, getting the other generations to see your point of view when we're all taught as a culture not to talk about sex, politics, and religion is very, very, that's, like, the work in itself is just reaching out to people who are close to you, who don't agree with you, and giving them your side of the view, and opening up society to say, hey, you know, sometimes traditional values need to be looked at again. And I know I'm a model, and I've had to have this conversation with people. I've lost boyfriends over it. And the whole thing of just affirming your body as something beautiful and how men have a really hard time with seeing a naked person and not seeing it as a sexual act. And I just told my former boyfriend, I said, well, you're not an artist. Come and see the people. Come to the class and see if you think men are being lecherous. Really hard to break through that mindset. So I just want to say congratulations taking on the people who are closest to us. And I think that's our work. Is to make
that's right, and you do it, and bless you for doing it. You know, that was about 30-some years ago in the first part of the feminist movement.
Right.
But I'm glad it's continuing, and it's essential. My granddaughters have all been involved in political action for women. They marched to D.C. with me.
Really? You have five grandchildren.
I have six.
You have six. Oh, you're right.
I have one grandson, and he's a pianist. And when you play, it makes me realize what a gift you have.
Oh.
And he has that gift, too. And it's a thrill.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
What march were you on with your granddaughters?
Well, in 2004, there was a march in Washington, D.C. for women's rights.
Right, and nobody knew about it,
right? For choice. Well, I found out about it when I was in an exhibition at the San Antonio Museum of Art. And one of the women who had brought me down there with the banners told me about it, and I said, she was a real strong political activist, and she said, I'm going to march. And I said, so am I. I could never march in the 60s because I had all these little children. What am I going to do with them? And so I'm coming, but I'm going. And so then I called my daughters. And they wanted to come, and my niece and my sister, and then my daughters brought their daughters.
How wonderful.
So we had, what did we have? We had nine or ten of us, and we wore shirts in honor of my mother, matriarchal. We had those Russian dolls, which I did when she died, as both an art piece and a card. And then the matriarchal dolls were on the shirt, and we carried my banner. And
how wonderful.
Oh, it was wonderful. So they then, and it was ugly when we had to march by the very angry anti-abortion people with their horrible sound and images. And we had told the girls that there would be angry people. A couple of their parents are doctors, so they, you know, can talk about the medical side of things. But what was so wonderful is one of the younger ones is in the second grade. So she went back home to Chicago, and in her class at the end of the day, Monday morning, at the end of the teacher said, "What have you done this weekend? Would you like to share?" Well, Allie raises her hand and she said, "Well, I marched with my grandmother in Washington, D.C. for abortion." And of course, the teacher goes, "Oh, what am I going to do with this?" So she said, "Well, that's interesting, Allie. That's a subject that you need to talk to your parents about. We don't talk about that in school." So at the end of the day, the teacher says, "Is there anything anybody would like to know that happened today?" And a little boy in the back said, "How do you spell abortion?" So by then it was all over school.
Wow, that's amazing. That's wonderful.
Well, she wasn't thrown out. She might have been in some places.
Well, I guess that's true. Yes. Yes. Well, good. That's just lovely. I want to give your website again, and where people can go and see your stunning, absolutely stunning images. And I have the page that it's on, I think, here, but it might be too long. It's,
well, if you just do www.lydiarule.com,
yeah,
the site will come up, and then you click my name, my signature, and it'll give you all choices of banners, collages, self-portraits, alchemy, kinds of art forms.
Yeah.
We're about the Black Madonnas.
It's your name, / Black Madonnas, yeah. Page one, HTML. Okay, that's because that's really important for people to, I know they'll be interested in seeing your very stunning work. Do you have sets of them? I mean, you can't just have one set that you sent to the
round. I have, they started with 18. Then I gifted 10 probably to the archaeology dig. I recreated those, so we did them again. And then I have reproduced, maybe 30 or 40 for various reasons, for institutions, for commissions, for private collectors.
Mm-hmm.
But the bulk of the work, the bulk of the girls, I call them now,
mm-hmm.
they went from 18 to now there are 275.
Wow.
Stay with me.
Wow.
And then I'm the person who has to keep track of them.
Yes,
almost a full-time job.
You have a vested interest in that. You know, we're getting time to close. It's just been wonderful to have you here. And thank you. It's so important for all of us. So I'm going to be seeing you next month, and I'll talk to you much before then.
Thank you very much for the hour.
Oh, it's been a wonderful hour, Lydia.
Good night.
Good night.